personally, as much as I sympathize with the very integralist mind frame of a lot of our confreres in the traditional movement, I think it's a fool's errand in today's world to think that we can do something like that. Because when I look at Europe, the integralist, triumphant, you know, 13th century, 14th century stuff that leads us to these great Spanish empires and things, that's 1,000 years after development. That's 600 years after Charles Martel and Charlemagne. I mean, there's lots of things that have to come in place before that to get to the point where you can have an entire population saying, we're going to go on a crusade together because the Pope said so, and we want to, and he's good, and we're good, and it's all great. Mm-hmm. I think we're kind of like at the fall of the empire right now, and we've got to rebuild. So I want to get your thoughts on, as much as I sympathize with the integralist, very monarchical aspect that people have in their thinking about this stuff, I think we need to look more to the even small L libertarian types and say, we've got to really decentralize and do things in a more organic fashion. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I maybe wouldn't use the word libertarian, but I don't disagree with your supposition. I mean, the fact of the matter is that for most Catholics in all times and all places, you know, they were not as connected as we are today. That sounds like a duh, but extrapolate that to, you know, would they know the latest papal encyclical? No, probably not. Would they know the latest scandal from Rome? No, probably not. And in many cases, would they even know the name of the Pope?
Well, and if they didn't do any digging as far as like, what is he saying during the canon? They may have not have. Yeah,
that's right. And so, you know, and a lot of people make, you know, they say, I just want to be, you know, a dumb middle-aged, you know, peasant or a Catholic, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some wisdom to that, and some people want to emulate that. But at the same time, we can't deny the fact that we do live in the information age, mm-hmm. and information can be a huge blessing because a lot of information, unfortunately, is suppressed. Today, you know, it's the old ways of doing things, the traditional magisterium of the church is hard to come by, but it's all online. You know, you can go find the sermons of Saint Alphonsus if you want to. You didn't have to hope to be born in his time and attend his parish so that you could hear his sermons. You know, we can all hear them now. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, but ultimately, I think a community, and I probably got a jet after this, but a community which tries to found itself outside of either of the two traditional manners of natural resources or church resources is destined to fail. So if you have this notion of getting back to the land, and the return to the land movement is still a thing. It started 115 years ago in Scotland and England, and is something that people should read about. And we all have an urge to do it, but do it in the right way. It doesn't mean go out and centrally plan 60,000 acres and try to parcel them and pre-sell them and build cookie cutter homes with a Novus Ordo chapel in the center. I mean, that's just not the way to do it. Especially have people on the board of directors who have never done anything like that before. I mean, one of the ladies on the board of the directors, the one who unfortunately committed adultery on her husband, she is the foundress of a school. I mean, that's great that she founded a school, and it's not a bad academy. In fact, I know a lot of people who have had success with that. But if you are not a developer or a builder, and you seek to build the most audacious Catholic development in modern history, at least admit that you need some help.
Yeah, this is something that you got a jet right now or after the segment?
I should go soon.
Okay, just let us know. But I think what you're getting to is you need to find people who are competent to do the job. I would like them all to be Catholic. That's great. But the first thing you got to do is you got to find somebody who's competent. You want to build a house, you don't say, first and foremost, are you Catholic? I mean, if you have that luxury, great. But it's, what kind of houses can you build? And have you built them? And can I see them? And what's your price? And are you honest? I mean, that's kind of where you... So that's why we have to get out of the diocesan framework of everything being done in-house through some sort of Catholic charity or Catholic union or Catholic whatever, in the sense that it's understood in the diocese, because efficiency and competency is not part of the framework. Well, Mike, that's fine. You got to go. It sounds like you got a lot going on there. So thanks for coming on. I'm sure there'll be more to talk about in the days coming up. So just let me know. And we've always got a place for you here.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Talk to you soon. Okay, so that's a good good comments there by Mike. You're listening to the Kennedy Profession here on the Crusade Channel. It's the last live radio station standing. It reminds me of something I've been thinking about when he talked about the Middle Ages and the decentralization and this idea that, the Catholic and Christian civilization that existed before us wasn't some sort of centralized plan thing, but it was based on acquiring natural resources and so on and so forth. This is something I've been thinking about a lot recently. I was looking through some of the encyclicals and I was talking about this with my friend Jeremiah Bannister, who's guest hosted the show here. And we were having a friendly disagreement on our Monday morning show with Tim Flanders, who's also guest hosted at the Meaning of Catholic. And we were disagreeing about how to look at what the popes have said about the social teachings or social principles of the church. And it's funny, when I talk to old school traditional priests, they call them Catholic social principles. Whereas when I talk to new school, I don't mean that in a pejorative, but just sort of our, you know, the milieu we're in right now and people formed in it, they call them Catholic social teachings, which means doctrine. And it's not as if the principles themselves aren't something that are used for teachings, but it's not as simple as we've been led to believe that there is some sort of manifesto for this is what Catholic social teaching is. And one of the reasons for that I've realized is that, you know, I can't stand it when liberals in the classical philosophical sense who profess to be Catholics, but will say, well, that's not infallible. That's not infallible. Well, a lot of stuff are binding on the faithful when they're not infallible. Infallibility just means that there's a certain type of doctrine that will just never be changed. There are still things that you have to believe under pain of sin, but those teachings could be developed or clarified further. Like, for example, it was never the case that a Catholic would believe that Mary had ever sinned. But there was legitimate disagreement until it was defined about, was she conceived without original sin, which was the majority view, and extremely patristic if you look back, or was she conceived and then regenerated quite quickly? That was, you know, it was not as if Mary was a regular gal, or Mary was the Theotokos, the God bearer. It was always Mary is the super duperest woman ever, you know, but it was a distinction in terms. But it was always under pain of sin that you wouldn't just go around saying that Mary was just some old gal. So it's more simple than saying, well, something's infallible or it's not infallible. That's not how it works. That's a whole other conversation. That's more of something that perhaps Brother Andre would talk about with Mr. Church on Wednesdays. But when it comes to the social stuff, one of the reasons why we have to look at the recommendations from popes and bishops and so forth, I don't want to say with a grain of salt, I want to say with a critical lens and a contextual lens, when it comes to matters of social principles, is because what we're dealing with when we deal with government, economies, and so forth, we're dealing with an intersection of morals and science. And science in the sense of applied practical sciences. That's what economics is. This is why, on the one hand, there's a great error that is an atomistic view of economics, where it's just, this is basically what you see with the neocons. You know, you see Paul Ryan will get up, well, he's retired now, but guys like him will get up, and they'll have a spreadsheet on, or, you know, a blown up graph on some sort of easel or whiteboard presentation, whatever the materials will be. And they say, look, this is how the American economy is going to be improved because look at all these numbers and these graphs are going up that way. But they don't include any moral considerations. Okay, there's an error there because you take out the idea of human activity, human decision making, and human decision making will ultimately be the thing that binds and loosens the economy in a sense. On the other hand, you have an idea that economics is completely a moral enterprise and that the numbers are basically secondary. And that's essentially, in the most extreme, you get that in communism, of course. Whereas, you know, we'll just all do this stuff because it's the right thing to do according to us. And then the numbers will just fall in line. You know, that's no different than Two Scoops Joe Biden's younger self, Fidel Castro's son, Justin Trudeau. That's no different than this idea where he said the budget would balance itself. That's just nonsense. And we're just going to, you know, it was all, we're going to do the right thing. We're going to do the progressive thing, and a progressive economy will balance itself. That's completely ridiculous. So when we're looking at the Catholic social principles, we have to take into account that there's always a balance of the science of the matter and the morals. So the magisterium can tell us rightly and strongly what we ought to believe or consider about the moral sphere. But the bishops and the Pope, they're not given some sort of special charism in telling us what we have to believe about matters of fact if they're outside of the realm of faith and morals. We would often, popes in the past have been geniuses, and we could trust their guidance because they happen to be extremely competent in their own right. But it's not necessarily part of their office. That's very evident today when, you know, we have popes and we have the Pope and bishops basically telling us to go get the jab that we don't want to get and we don't need to get. So there's an example of that in the most sort of absurd sense, but it can be even more nuanced than that, even with great popes like those who have written many of the social encyclicals.